কুঞ্জ বিহারি গোপী জানা বালবা গিরি মন দরে জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি গোপী জানা বালবা গিরি মন দরে যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জনরঞ্জন যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জনরঞ্জন যমুনাথে রমণচরে যমুনাথে রমণচরে জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারি গোপী জানা বল্লব গিরি মন দরে যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জনরঞ্জন জয় প্রভুপাদা জয় প্রভুপাদা জয় প্রভুপাদা জয় প্রভুপাদা
জয় নিত্য লীল প্রবিষ্ট অষ্ট সরস্বতী শ্রী মনস্ক ভঞ্জয় শ্রী ভক্তি বেদান্ত স্বামী শিল প্রভুপদ শ্রীকৃষ্ণ চৈতন্য প্রভু নিতানন্দ শ্রী অদ্বৈত শিখরার হর শিবাসী গৌরবী শ্রী শ্রী রাধা শ্যাম সুন্দর গোপা গোপীনাথ শ্যাম কুন্দরার খুন্দি গিরি গোবনন কি জয় গ্রন্থরাজ শ্রীমদ ভগবতাম কি জয় গৌর ভীমনন্দী অগ্লোয় শ্রী সমুদ্র অগ্লোয় শ্রী সমুদ্র All glory to the Lord. All glory to the Lord, the seed of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 2nd chapter, text number 4. Samuhutam abutusnim. Krishnan grisudhaya brisam. Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Nirmagna Sadhu Nirvita Samohutam Abhutyusnim Krishnangri Sudhaya Brisham Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Nirmagna Sadhu Nirvita Samohutam Abhutusnim Krishnangri Sudhaya Brisham Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Nirmagna Sadhu Nivrita. Please chant.
Samuhurtam Abhutushnim
Samuhurtam Abhutushnim
Krishnangri Sudhaya Prisham
Krishnangri Sudhaya Prisham
Tivrena Bhakti Yogena
Tivrena Bhakti Yogena
Nirmagna Sadhu Nirvita
Nirmagna Sadhu Nirvita.
We'll call the students. Sa
Uddhava,
Muhurtam,
for a moment,
Abhut,
became,
Tushnim,
dead silent.
Something many of the teachers would like to know the meaning of sometimes in the classroom.
Krishna Angri,
the lotus feet of the Lord,
Sudhaya,
by the nectar,
Vrisham,
well matured,
Tivrena,
by very strong,
Bhakti
Yogena,
devotional service,
Nimagna,
absorbed in,
Sadhu,
good,
Nivrita,
fully in love.
Translation. For a moment, he remained dead silent, and his body did not move. He became absorbed in the nectar of remembering the Lord's lotus feet in devotional ecstasy, and he appeared to be going increasingly deeper into that ecstasy. Purport for Srila Prabhupada. On the inquiry by Vidura about Krishna, Uddhava appeared to be awakened from slumber. He appeared to regret that he had forgotten the lotus feet of the Lord. Thus, he again remembered the lotus feet of the Lord and remembered all his transcendental loving service unto him. And by so doing, he felt the same ecstasy that he used to feel in the presence of the Lord. Because the Lord is absolute, there is no difference between his remembrance and his personal presence. Thus, Uddhava remained completely silent for a moment, but then he appeared to be going deeper and deeper into ecstasy. Feelings of ecstasy are displayed by the highly advanced devotees of the Lord. These eight kinds of transcendental changes in the body, tears, shivering of the body, perspiration, restlessness, throbbing, choking of the throat, etc., and all were manifested by Uddhava in the presence of Vidura. Om jnana tamarandasya jnanjana shalakaya chaksu unmilitam yena tasmai sri guruve namaha bhukam karoti vachalam bhangum lam jayati girim yakripa tamaham vande shri guru nirantaram vancha kapatini vascha pipa sindhu vahe vasa dikanam pavani jo vashti devu namaha jaya sri krishna chaitanya prabhu nitananda shri advaita gadatha shri vasati gaurava srinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. This particular purport, to borrow a phrase, is simply pregnant with so many different avenues by which one could speak on it. There are indications in here to many different levels of our philosophy. But that's as we should expect. The Srimad Bhagavatam is, after all, actually a roadmap for us on our progress in devotional service. Prabhupada said in a lecture in 1974 in Los Angeles, "So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find everything, whatever is necessary for the advancement of human civilization. Everything is there described, and knowledge also in all departments, even astronomy, astrology, politics, sociology, atomic theory, everything is there in the Bhagavatam. Vidya Bhagavata Vadhi. Therefore, if we study Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully, then we will get all knowledge completely." And as we cover these particular topics Prabhupada mentions, we can easily think of which canto of Bhagavatam these subjects are covered. You know, details on atomic theory. The Bhagavatam, yes, third canto. Time from the atom. Details on politics, yes, the entire history of the first canto of the dealings of Pandavas and the instructions of Grandfather Bhishma. All of these things are all there in the Bhagavatam. So in these four opening verses to this second chapter, we're given the descriptions of a genuine devotee, namely Uddhava. There are three words in the Sanskrit that I think are very important in regards to Uddhava and his character. Brisham Tivena Bhakti Yogena. And the translation for these means very mature, very strong devotional service. Very mature, very strong devotional service. This is actually what we all desire. This is why everyone is here. This is why we take to the process of devotional service. This is why we have given up so many material activities, because we want to be mature and strong in the execution of our devotional practices. We shouldn't allow ourselves to become stagnant, to become dull, to become unmotivated in our path of bhakti. We should always feel that ananda buddhi vardhanam, always joyful, always happy. We want maturity. We want strength. This is something we want in any particular field. Very mature leader, very mature employee, very strong in their activities. These are descriptions that we'd like to hear about people. So we should want to be described in this same way. Now, in that same lecture, Prabhupada describes the nature of picking fruit. How many of your students have ever gone to any of these U-picks? Blueberries, blackberries, strawberries, whatever. So many of you. So the quality of these particular places is that the fruit matures on the vine. The fruit matures in the tree, and it becomes that much better. Prabhupada notes, Galitam Palam. This means the fruit that is matured in the tree. In this world, we artificially mature the fruit. We take the fruit unripe, and by some artificial method, we get it ripened. But this is not acceptable. If you are striving for a holistic, wholesome, nutritious life, generally these types of, of course, what can we do in this day and age? The apples are picked, the bananas are picked when they're bright green in South America, put on a cargo ship, gassed with all types of different God knows what, and sent to the market where they arrive still partially green, and you buy them just hoping. Whenever I do a puja, I tell somebody to buy bananas. I say, don't buy the green ones. They're next to useless. So this is the way it's done. But Prabhupada says, this is not acceptable. But that fruit, which is ripened fully in the tree, that is very palatable, very sweet. Nigama galitam, galitam palam, fully matured fruit. That is the Srimad Bhagavatam, the fully matured fruit of the desire tree known as the Vedas. I have the good fortune of having many banana trees in my yard, and the additional benefit these last 2 years, for some reason, maybe we just didn't have as severe winters, I don't know what the reasoning was, I'm not a botanist, but my banana trees bore fruit. I mean, massive. You know, 3 or 4 20 group bunches of bananas. And I was able to offer those to Giriraj. They're so sweet and tasty. So much unlike the bananas you get in the store. They have no flavor, no taste. You know. So, sabotaged by my own microphone. So this is the point that Prabhupada's making, that fruit which grows naturally and you pick from the tree, this is the sweetest. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam is described as that mature fruit of the Vedas. This is why the sages discuss Srimad Bhagavatam. This is why Srila Prabhupada encouraged every day we should listen to Srimad Bhagavatam. This is why Sanatana Goswami offered these glorious prayers that I was reciting in the beginning to Srimad Bhagavatam, because it is the matured fruit. It's very sweet to taste. So this is the method that we employ in understanding the Bhagavatam, to see the example of mature, strong devotees who have ripened in the process of devotional service. That can only happen when you stay linked to devotional practices. If you separate yourself from the devotional practices, you become like that green banana that's put in a cargo ship and gassed and sent halfway across the world and has no taste and no flavor and nobody wants. Now, expert cooks, they can take green bananas and do this, that, and the other, but as a general rule, for the purpose of being a banana. So this is the example that we have in Uddhava. This is what we have here, is that he is a very strong, very mature devotee, very deep in his understanding. He's an inspiration to us as a result. Now, according to this verse, to the untrained eye, he may have appeared to be in a silent, sleeping state. Prabhupada uses the word appeared twice in a row here. I think it's significant. If we look at this word, and we know that Prabhupada did not randomly pick words. Prabhupada always had the English Sanskrit dictionary and the commentary of the Acharyas on his desk when he was doing his translations. These two books he always traveled with. Kept them in his little suitcase, which was always locked up somewhere. So in this way, we know that Prabhupada had a specific reason. Now, the purpose of this can be seen in the definition of that word appeared. The definition we have is to seem to be or to give the impression of being. So by observation only, not by deeper knowledge, but by external observation only, would have appeared to be silent or sleeping. Sometimes we see this in the Bhagavatam class. Someone appears to be silent or sleeping. Maybe they actually are. Maybe they're in some ecstasy. We don't know. Although Srila Prabhupada, many times he would say, they're sleeping. Do not sleep in the Bhagavatam class. At any rate, sleep anywhere else, Prabhupada said, but not in the Bhagavatam class. So, anyway, would have appeared also to be forgetful of Krishna due to this appearance, here again the word twice, of being in a silent sleeping state. Lotus feet of Krishna, Krishna Angiri. I was fortunate as a young devotee to live in a temple where this understanding of trying to remember the lotus feet of Krishna was very prominent. We were famous or infamous throughout ISKCON, depending on your view of history at that time. At any rate, we were very well trained and encouraged. And this is the way that one becomes deeper in their Krishna consciousness. Now, in reality, Uddhava was going deeper into trance by such remembrance, as the actual translation is. He became absorbed, Prabhupada mentions in the purport here, that it appeared that he had forgotten the lotus feet of the Lord. This is, as I say, the external observation only. Now, someone can become very, very expert at observing something and understanding human nature, understanding psychology, understanding the way of the world, and look at someone and understand by their activities what's going on inside there. It's very easy to do if you have that experience. In this case, it wasn't so easy because Uddhava was very subtle in this manifestation. He wasn't proudly putting it out there that he was experiencing these types of ecstasies. So this remembrance of the lotus feet of the Lord, Krishna Angri. And we have 9 processes of devotional service. Let's get the students involved here. Hold on, let me turn my hearing aids up just a moment.
There we go.
All right. Who wants to name the first process of devotional service? Give me a hand.
Hearing.
Okay, there's one. Don't be bashful.
Chanting,
there's 2. Someone else.
Serving.
Dasyam, okay, serving. Mm-hmm. Dancing's nice too, yeah.
Deity worship.
Worship, archana, yes, uh-huh.
Japa.
What's that?
Japa.
Japa's chanting, yeah, yeah.
Hearing and chanting without the
chanting.
Hearing and
chanting, okay, yeah. Chanting, okay, everybody likes to chant. This is good. Remembering, thank you, the point we're discussing here, yes. Loudly in the back there.
Offering
prayers, yes. Forgetfulness. No, that's not one of the 9 processes. That's one of the 9 processes of material life. That's the one I'm embracing the most. All right, so let me go through the list here. Hearing, chanting, remembering, serving the lotus feet, pertinent to this verse, worshiping, offering prayers, being a servant, being a friend, and fully surrendering. These are the 9 processes that we have available to us in devotional service. Now, Prabhupada says, all of these, or even any one of these, can bring perfection in devotional service. I like to hear and chant, but all this offering prayers and remembering, I can't do all 9. That's okay. Just take 1. Oh, I want to be Krishna's friend. Okay, that's all right. All of these different 9 processes are there for us to make an advanced move, progress in devotional service. And when we attain that perfection in devotional service by any one of these nine processes, then we can begin to manifest different types of ecstasies. Now, these ecstasies are also named becoming stunned, perspiring, standing of the hair on the end of the body, on the edge, you know, faltering of the voice, trembling of the body, changing of bodily colors, shedding of tears, and total devastation. Now, if you take any one of these individually by themselves, they have their corresponding presence in mundane life. When I'm doing the yard work, I'm perspiring like anything. Does that mean I'm in ecstasy? You know, if you stay out in the yard too long, you get a sunburn. My skin changes colors. Does that mean I'm in ecstasy? So all of these different things, we can find them. But when they are coupled with the practice of focused, dedicated devotional service, then they can manifest in their proper way. Boys, front row there. When Srila Prabhupada was with us, no doubt he was in touch with these different symptoms. His external manifestation of them was very rare. And if it did manifest, he checked it very quickly. This was to set an example for the neophyte disciples he had who may try to imitate, or Prabhupada did, therefore I can do. But that level is a very, very high standard of pure devotional service, which is unknown to us. This is an important reason for reading the Nectar of Devotion. How many of the students are familiar with Nectar of Devotion? How many of you have it in your home? May I suggest a reading from the Nectar of Devotion as your bedtime stories instead of whoever? Very, very important information there. All the different types of ecstasies of devotional service are described in the Nectar of Devotion, as well as the examples of those devotees that manifest them. And some of these symptoms in devotional service are quite uncommon. We were distributing books in the airport one time, and a gentleman came up to us and said, I got a question for you guys. Okay, sure. Most of the people we would encounter in the airports when we were distributing books did not have questions for us. But I have a question for you. I got this book, Nectar Devotion, and I was reading it. Oh, okay, that's good. Can somebody tell me how belching is a sign of ecstatic love for Krishna? Good question. So these types of ecstasies are all described, but if you read the full text around them, it tells the example and why it's there like that. So the question will arise, how do we get to this level? How do we get to the level of embracing these nine processes of devotional service? How do we get to the level of understanding and maybe even experiencing these eight ecstasies that are available to us? There's a famous American comedian slash musician named Jack Benny. And he once told this joke. There's a fellow that goes to New York City to attend a concert at Carnegie Hall. And he gets lost on the street. So he spots a gentleman coming near him that's carrying a violin case. Oh, musician. Excuse me, sir. Can you tell me, how do I get to Carnegie Hall? The musician smiles and looks at him and says, practice, practice, practice. So this is very true in our devotional life as well. How do we advance in devotional service? How do we come to a level of possibly maybe even experiencing some of these eight ecstasies which are given? Practice, practice, practice. There is a clue given as to how to practice this. And it's actually in the second verse of this chapter, And taking into account the makeup of our audience, I thought it quite appropriate to read this verse in purport. Even though Govinda spoke on it on Monday, it's very relevant to our membership here today. He, Uddhava, was one who, even in his childhood, at the age of 5 years, was so absorbed in the service of Lord Krishna that when he was called by his mother for morning breakfast, he did not wish to have any. How many of you turn down breakfast if mom tells you there's pancakes with maple syrup? No. Purport. From his very birth, Uddhava was a natural devotee of Lord Krishna, or a Nitya Siddha, a liberated soul. From natural instinct, he used to serve Krishna. Even in his childhood, he used to play with dolls in the form of Krishna. How many of you have dolls at home? Radha Krishna, Nrisimha, Hanuman, etc., etc. He would serve these dolls by dressing them, feeding them, and worshiping them. And thus, he was constantly absorbed in the play of transcendental realizations. These are the signs of an eternally liberated soul. An eternally liberated soul is a devotee of the Lord who never forgets him. Human life is meant for reviving one's eternal relation with the Lord, and all religious injunctions are meant to awaken that dormant instinct in the living entity. The sooner this is awakened, the quicker the mission of human life is fulfilled. In a good family of devotees, the children get the opportunity to serve the Lord in many ways. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, 6th chapter, verse 41, Suchinam Shinatam Gehe Yoga Vishta Vajayate. Even the fallen devotee gets the opportunity to take their birth in a family of well-situated brahmanas or in a rich, well-to-do family. In both these families, there is a good opportunity to revive one's sense of God consciousness automatically, because particularly in these families, the worship of Lord Krishna is regularly performed, and the child thus gets the opportunity to imitate the process of worship called archana. How many of you have deities in your home? There we go. Boom, just like the purport says. How many of you have parents that have you help them with the deities in your home? There we go. Boom. Just like the purport says. How many of you are experiencing ecstasy when you're helping with those deities? All right, that'll come. Wow. I take the dust of your feet on my head, all of you that raise your hands. So this is the process that you've all been fortunate enough to be born into. A family of devotees where you're trained in devotional service for the purpose of perfecting your human life. This verse is speaking about all of you sitting here. You're actually being described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is the way of learning how to be a devotee, to begin early. Of course, we have two very famous examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which students can name two very famous young devotees. Subhadra? Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj, yes. Now, you may not be capable of only eating the leaves found in the woods next to the school down there. I don't know, Nartam might be able to pull that off. And while your fathers may not be trying to boil you in oil or burn you in a fire, still, you all have the opportunity by these devotees to be trained, by your family situation to be trained. So again, in that same lecture, Prabhupada makes the point of the benefit of this training from childhood. He notes how civilization is running wild to enjoy the senses at any cost. Doesn't matter what I have to sacrifice, just as long as I can get sense gratification. And as a result of that, ending up in one of the 8,400,000 different species. But Prabhupada makes a point, and this is a very important point. Therefore, real civilization is to teach the children from the very beginning of life how to control the senses. how to control the senses. Of course, we have a perfect example of this in our Parama Guru, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When he was a young boy, his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, brought in mango to the home. He saw them, oh, good mango. And Bhaktivinoda, as a parent, in a loving way, admonished him, no. First, this is for the deity. How are you thinking to enjoy before the deity has received it? No, first we offer to the deity, then you get to have. Bhaktisiddhanta was so serious about this chastisement, he took a vow as a young child, 5, 6 years old. I will never eat mango the rest of my life. Never eat mango the rest of my life. Now, I don't know about all of you. Now, right now, you get some questionable mangoes. But those Alfonso mangoes that are like butter on the inside, that when you cut them, the juice just drips out. Oh, how can you give these up? This is how strict Bhaktisiddhanta was. No, I have acted outside of sense control. Therefore, I will not take mango. You may or may not be able to make such a vow, but the point is that we're trained, particularly all of you are trained, this is how we control our senses, that everything first comes to Krishna. Elsewise, we end up in one of these 8,400,000 different species. Now, referring back to the point that Prabhupada makes here, but the Bhagavatam being the source of all knowledge, Bhagavatam breaks down all the species. 8,400,000, 900,000 types of aquatics, 2 million types of plants and trees, 1,100,000 types of insects, of which 1 million of them live right here in Alachua. The other 100,000 live in Australia. 1 million birds, 3 million beasts, and 400,000 of the human species, of which only a small fraction are considered civilized. So this breakdown is there very clearly as to how to understand this. Now, in the third verse to the same chapter we're looking at today, there's a point that reflects on to the other members of our audience here that, how shall we say politely, maybe a bit older. Alachua is an old community in many aspects. And that quote is here. Uddhava undoubtedly became old, but that does not mean that his spirit became old. His service attitude matured on the transcendental plane, and therefore, as soon as he was questioned by Vidura about Lord Krishna, he at once remembered his Lord by reference to the context and forgot himself on the physical plane. Service on the bodily plane dwindles as the body grows older, but the spirit is never old. And therefore, on the spiritual plane, the service is never tiresome. This is the sign of pure devotional service to the Lord. As will be explained later, Lakshanam Bhakti Yogasya, in Kapila's instructions to his mother Devahuti. So not only do we have this wonderful example in these short four verses of the standard for which the young children can be raised in Krishna consciousness, but we have an example here for those of us that are older. Service on the bodily plane dwindles as the body grows older. I think many of us have experienced this, that as the body gets a little older, we maybe can't do as much as we used to, with the same enthusiasm, maybe not. Certain activities, you know, I remember when I was a young Brahmacharya, where's Akurnas there? When I was a young Brahmacharya in St. Louis, the feast would come around, this festival feast, you know, Balaram's appearance that particularly sticks in mind, one entire plate of rice, one entire plate of sabji, one entire plate of halava, and one entire plate of milk burfi, powdered milk burfi, and 10 or 12 cups of sweet rice. This was the standard. You just ate it. No problem. I can do that. And then you would go down to Gaur Arti and dance like a madman for 30 minutes, 45 minutes. Can't do that anymore. Even if you're foolish enough like me to have the desire, Krishna's arrangement for the aging of the body just won't do it.
I can't drink 12 cups of sweet rice anymore. I have to knock it off at 6. So the point is that even in our youth, even in our old age, the opportunity to fully absorb ourselves in devotional service is there. It is the opportunity for us to appreciate how, even for a moment. This is the second word in the Sanskrit here, muhurtam, for a moment. We all know this word muhurta, Brahma muhurta. The muhurta, the day is broken up into different time segments. And those time segments have different qualities. Three of the muhurtas throughout the day are considered extremely auspicious. The most auspicious is Brahma muhurta. This is a period of approximately 45 minutes before the sun rises. And this is the ideal time for executing various devotional practices. This is why we have our Mangalarti like this. Secondly is the Abhijit muhurta. Abhijit muhurta commences at just about the midday. Depending on the sun at that time of year, it'll be a little bit later, a little earlier, between 11 and 1-ish, like that. This Abhijit muhurta is very powerful for success, for achieving one's goals. You'll remember in the story of Hiranyaksha that when Lord Vraha was battling with Hiranyaksha, he was a bit playful. You know, he was having fun. It was a little bit of fighting. You know, sometimes the fighting between people, you know, like what we would classify, for lack of a better term, a bar fight, these aren't very uplifting, you know, just mean and that. Or sometimes you have fighting among siblings, which is a bit lighter. So in this way, the fighting was going on, and Lord Raha was having good fun of it, stretching it out. You know, like a Prabhupada describes when a cat gets a mouse. He doesn't just kill it. He's got the mouse. It's in his mouth. He can snap its neck, finish with it right there. We used to have, in Brooklyn, Skirmerhorn, we had a temple cat. This cat kept the mouse population down. As with any big building in New York, you got mice. And Dossie, we called her, she was very well trained. Never went into the kitchen or duty area. She knew there was a boundary there, don't go any further. And we would give her maha. You know, the offering would come out, we'd put a little maha on it. And I remember very distinctly one time, we put the plate there at the bottom of the stairs, and she looked at it and pushed it around with her paw and then ran off for a bit, came back with a mouse, put it on the plate, and then ate everything. So, this is the nature of the cat. Now, the cat has that mouse in its mouth and can just snap its neck and be finished, but it lets it go and swats it around, plays with it, has a little fun. So this is how Brahma was exchanging with Hiranyaksha. Oh, Lord Brahma said to him, my dear Lord, do not play with this demon any longer, for the Abhijit muhurta is soon finishing. And when it does, his potency will become stronger, because after Abhijit muhurta, the next muhurta is not very auspicious. So Abhijit muhurta, the time of great victory. And then, of course, there's the Goduli muhurta. Goduli muhurta happens in the evening, just as the cows are coming home from the pasturing fields, and they raise the dust, and that dust covers everything. So auspicious, the dust from the hooves of the cows. Especially if you happen to be a Govardhan and the cows are coming back, and the dust from Govardhan, and they're double potency. So in this way, we have these muhurtas. So even for a moment, any one of these muhurtas, even for a moment, one can remember the lotus feet of the Lord and get full benefit. So we have it right here. These four introductory verses to this chapter, they give a full description of not only the access from the different age groups to devotional service, but my observation, of our community membership. How one, whether they're the children or whether they're the old people, have that opportunity for staying engaged in devotional service. A full description of our path in devotional life, and a full description of what can and will be ahead of us if, and there's the caveat, there's always these palashrutis at the end of a particular set of verses or poems or glorification of the Lord, that if you just recite this at this time, this, you'll get this, 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 and this. And there's always a if. If one recites these 108,000 times at the time of what they're halfway into, you know, all these different things. So how do we know that we're going to, what will it take for our devotional service to become perfected? And what will come our way? It's all dependent on Krishnangri Sudhaya Brusham Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. Very mature, very strong practice of our devotional service by remembering the lotus feet of the Lord. So this is the example we have here with Uddhava, that even when it appears that he's not still internally, and we see here the humility of Vidura, you know? He appeared to regret forgetting the lotus feet of the Lord. Did Uddhava ever forget the lotus feet of the Lord? No, he's a completely pure devotee. So dear to Krishna that Krishna sent him to the gopis to give them his message. Why? Because he wanted a dependable messenger? All right, that may be there. But because he wanted Uddhava to experience the pure devotional service of the gopis. Okay, you're a very advanced devotee. Now I want you to see someone even more advanced. And he didn't have to say this to Uddhava, because Uddhava was enough of a devotee to recognize the purity of other devotees. This is what happens when we become free from envy. We can recognize the advancement of other devotees and appreciate it. No jealousy, no enviousness. Been corresponding with one newer devotee, was regretting that this devotee sees their god brothers and god sisters and they're doing such nice service and making such nice advancement. It feels a little envious that I want that too. No envy in the spiritual world. Jasoda is not envious of the fact that Nanda Maharaj has such and such a relationship. The cowherd boys are not envious of the fact that Mother Jasoda, you know, it's not like that. It's all cooperative. And each has their unique type of relationship. And without that envy, they're able to appreciate and thus work together cooperatively. This was Prabhupada's request to us. My only request is that you cooperate in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes more of a challenge than others, no doubt, but this is the understanding. And then by that, we can recognize more advanced devotees and appreciate them. And this is one of the characteristics of Uddhava that we have the example on. By remembering Krishna, by appearing to forget Krishna, and then remembering Krishna, it brought about the ecstasies in his devotional mood. So these four verses, I mean, we're just starting this chapter, and already these four verses are just blowing up with instruction. I mean, some of the other topics of this, I mean, any of you that would have given class could easily go deeper than I've gone with this. But, you know, there's so many opportunities in just these, 8 or 10 sentences in this purport. This is Prabhupada's potency. If we make ourselves even a bit familiar with Prabhupada's books, with Prabhupada's purports, you know, we talk about the different types of ecstasies here. Prabhupada made it clear these purports are his devotional ecstasies. This is where he manifested, not in shooting tears and, you know, falling on the floor and elongating and expanding and turning colors. Those things are all there. But Prabhupada manifested his ecstasies through these purports for our benefit. For our benefit. In this same lecture, Prabhupada speaks about the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he says, therefore we are encouraging that you must study the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's our duty. It's our responsibility. It's actually our joy. Who reads the Bhagavatam and then goes, oh, that was boring. Anybody got some Stephen King novels? Nobody. Nobody. When we read the Bhagavatam, we become very satisfied. And each of us has a particular part of the Bhagavatam that we like more than others. That's our favorite. And that's perfectly acceptable. You know? The attraction to a particular mood or flavor or instruction from the Bhagavatam is what connects us. So in this way, we can see that this mature, strong devotional service that in, imbibes and enhances our ability to remember the lotus feet of the Lord, this will bring us to the perfection of the path of bhakti. So, thank you very much. We'll finish there. If there's any comments, corrections, chastisements, Jatori's got something for me. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Hare Krishna. I was really ecstatic coming. I don't usually come on Wednesdays, but boy, when I saw the parking lot, wow, this is amazing.
It was like a festival day, right?
Yeah.
You know how you can tell it was a festival day? All the cars are parked wanky.
Anyway, I was just going to share one thing. You know, you were speaking nicely about the all the different species of life, and so much scientific knowledge in the Vedas. And after the midnight Artik, you know, I went out to, was fasting most of the day and went out to get prasadam, but apparently that's no longer a thing. There's no midnight after the midnight Artik feast anymore. It's kind of like, I don't know why, but it didn't happen. So, but anyway, I went with a few people. We went in the kitchen and got some prasadam, and I ended up sitting out in the pavilion with my son-in-law and these two guests that I know. One of them's a good friend from Ocala. And my son-in-law was just like, I don't usually get to see him like this, but he was like talking to my friends, my guests, you know. He was saying how England kind of like really dumbed down the Vedic culture. And so Prabhupada had to come here because everybody was imitating America. So Prabhupada came here to entice the Americans so that then now the Indians say, well, wow, they're doing that. I should do that too, you know. So now it's Prabhupada's kind of turned it around. And then he said something very fascinating to me. He says that now there's actually a movement, he said, of more advanced people in India. They're actually preaching to the young people, saying, you know, look, you've got to revive your culture. And he gave an example. He said that now the a lot of the scientists for computer programming and different things are finding that Sanskrit is a better fit for developing computer language.
For coding.
Pardon me?
For coding.
For coding, yeah, because, you know, the words in English, you know, sometimes, you know, you say one thing and like C, you know, like, well, what are you talking about? So I was like, really, I was really appreciating that from, you know, and also obviously learning about devotional service. And we have so much opportunity here.
This is the importance of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Srila Prabhupada, is that just like Bhagavad Gita as it is, you know, so many Bhagavad Gitas are there, so many interpretations, so many ideas, but Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita gave us directly the message. So the same thing with the verses. We may read a verse and not clearly understand it, but the Bhaktivedanta purports make everything very vivid to us. Okay. All right, we'll finish there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.